time.
Hitler on the march. And hour after hour, over burning cables, the news piles up from Europe. The world shaking almost unbelievable news that set Britain's foreign secretary to wringing his hands. The portentous news that overnight sent thousands upon thousands of young English men and women to enlist as anti-air raid volunteers. All yesterday, all today, the news poured in. And all tomorrow, the news will come from Vienna, from Rome, from Berlin, from London, and from the grave, sad battlefields of bloody Spain. And as the headlines scream each flying fact and rumor of an old world going mad, again, American families whose futures may hang on the cables from abroad are trying to understand.
For 2 million of these American families, Life, the weekly news magazine of pictures, has brought the stirring events of our times alive in its pages through pictures. And Life will continue to bring the news alive. Life readers have seen the shifting of the scenery for the great show that is now beginning. They have seen France's secret Maginot Line and the amazing defenses of little Czechoslovakia. They have gone with Life to mingle with the guests at the last gay ball in old Vienna. And Life has shown them it's on the march.
And just as the most vivid living story of the last World War was to be found in the drawings and maps and photographs of the illustrated magazines in England, so the greatest, most dramatic story of the critical weeks and months to come will be found week after week in pictures on the pages of Life. The new issue of Life will be on sale tomorrow, Friday morning. Get your copy early.
Tonight, the editors of Life, the news magazine of pictures, present by radio the reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the week.
From the march of time. Down from the melting snows of Europe's northern Alps, since before recorded history began, a mighty river has flowed majestically in a gently curving course south and eastward to the Black Sea, the River Danube. Before the birth of Christ, Rome established on the Danube an outpost, Vindobono, in the place the modern world calls Vienna. To the Roman Senate reported a Roman governor of Gaul named Julius Caesar,
Magnitudine caporum Germanos, incredibili virtute atque executione, in armis esse...
The Germans were a rude race, strong and cruel, and in war excelling all other barbarians. So reads Caesar's account of a strange, uncivilized tribe called Germans. And beyond the Danube, the Germans remained outside the ancient Roman Empire. In the year 955, on the Danube, Otto I established Ostmark, the genesis of the Duchy of Austria, seat of the Habsburg line of Holy Roman Emperors. By the year 1500, the empire on the Danube had spread its sovereignty from Vienna to Spain, the Netherlands, and newly discovered America. The centuries that followed brought shifts of empire and of power, but always the city on the Danube was Central Europe's ancient independent capital. Then, in 1889, the same year that saw the mysterious death of the favorite heir of the last great Habsburg, in the municipal records of the little frontier village of Braunau was entered...
Born April 20th, 1889, to Alois and Clara Hitler, his son, Adolf.
Another crown prince of Austria murdered. Sarajevo in the First World War. At its end, the Habsburgs are gone. Their empire split. And Army Corporal Adolf Hitler has gone to humble, war-wracked Germany. There, in 1924, in prison for political revolt, the young ex-corporal is feverishly writing his book, My Battle.
German Austria must return to the great German motherland. Common blood belongs to common blood. Austria must return to Germany.
On the 11th of March, this year of 1938, at 5:30 in the morning...
General order to the 7th German Army Corps. Notice of immediate mobilization.
41st Regiment of Infantry, proceed immediately to Austrian frontier and await orders.
4th Army Air Corps ordered from unit to aerodrome at Passau.
Mobilization. Class of 1900 ordered to report immediately for duty.
March 11, 1938. At 1 o'clock in the afternoon, over the Austrian state radio.
People of Austria, rumors of a German mobilization have been denied. An important announcement is expected at any moment from Chancellor Schuschnigg. In the meantime, we will continue our musical program. Please stand by.
At 1:30 on Friday afternoon, advanced German regiments from Munich are at the Austrian border. At 1:30 on Friday afternoon at London's number 10 Downing Street, Prime Minister and Mrs. Neville and Chamberlain are hosts to high cabinet ministers in a farewell luncheon to retiring German Ambassador Joachim von Ribbentrop. As they finish the last course, a servant leans beside Britain's Prime Minister.
Sir, here are the last dispatches.
Oh, yes, thank you. Herr von Ribbentrop, do you leave tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow, Mr. Chamberlain.
Oh, Mr. Chamberlain, have you more news of Austria?
I haven't really digested the report yet, Mrs. Churchill. You must excuse me.
Shall we go to the drawing room?
Lord Halifax, one moment. Herr von Ribbentrop, would you come into my study for a moment, please?
Yes, of course, Mr. Chamberlain.
Will you excuse us, my dear?
Certainly.
I'll join you in a moment.
Through here, Herr von Ribbentrop.
Thank you. Well, Your Excellency?
Herr von Ribbentrop, I have just received the latest cables from my embassy in Germany. German troops are moving to the Austrian frontier. I must ask you, Herr von Ribbentrop, whether your government is or is not proceeding with armed force against Austria.
I am sorry, Excellency, but I can give you no guarantees.
This comes badly, Herr von Ribbentrop, at a moment when Great Britain and Germany hope to settle the problems dividing us.
Your Excellency, the Führer sees no reason to start negotiations with Britain until German purposes elsewhere are achieved.
Friday afternoon, the 7th German Army Corps is en route to Innsbruck, Austria. At 3:30 in Paris, on the Quai d'Orsay, Foreign Minister Delbos is at the telephone.
Hello?
For Monsieur Delbos, Vienna calling.
Vienna, yes.
Go ahead.
This is Delbos speaking.
Monsieur Delbos, this is Guido Schmidt. The Nazis are en route to Vienna.
On their way to Vienna?
50,000 troops, they say. But still with France's help.
Herr Schmidt. Tell Herr Schuschnigg, today France has no government, no cabinet, no premier. I have talked with London, with Rome. There is nothing for...
Monsieur Delbos, it was pledged.
Our hands are tied, Herr Schmidt. France can do nothing alone.
I see.
But tell Herr Schuschnigg, we are very sorry.
On the evening of Friday, March 11th, the 19th and 41st German Regiment, the 4th German Army Air Corps, are closing in toward Vienna. And at 7:30 o'clock, the evening of March 11th, on the Austrian National Radio Station.
People of Austria, we interrupt for an important announcement. The Chancellor of Austria, Kurt Schuschnigg.
President Miklas has asked me to tell the people of Austria that he has yielded only to force. We were not prepared, even in this tragic situation, to shed blood. We have ordered our troops to offer no resistance to Germany. And so, I take leave of the Austrian people with a word of farewell uttered from the depths of my heart. God protect Austria.
Twelve hours later, 80,000 German troops are pouring through Austrian cities, towns, and hamlets to Salzburg, Linz, Limbach, to Graz, Kufstein, Innsbruck. And at 4 o'clock on the afternoon of March 12th, a black Mercedes-Benz rolls across the bridge from Simbach, Austria, into the frontier village of Braunau. And Hitler is in Austria. March 14th, 4:30 p.m. While Austria's 5 million Catholics anxiously wonder what the fate of their church will be under an anti-Catholic Nazi regime, in the parish offices of Vienna's proud St. Stephen's Church, a priest receives handsome, steel-faced Theodore, Cardinal Elitzer.
Your Eminence, have you any word?
When is he expected now?
Any moment, my son Hitler will drive by this very church.
At mass this morning, there was scarcely one young communicant. They're all outside, waiting for Hitler.
Youth likes parades. One can forgive them.
All Vienna is waiting for him and watching us to see what the church will do.
Yes, we will do what we must.
Even the bells, Your Eminence?
Yes, my son, the bells of St. Stephen's. Why not? It is the celebration Hitler demands. It is also a supplication to Almighty God. Let the church extend its hand. If it is rejected, well, my son, ring the bells. I pray God this great change for Austria can remain bloodless.
At 4:45 o'clock, Adolf Hitler enters Vienna in triumph. All that night and through the morning of March 15th, Vienna waits for one event, the Reichsführer's address. Then at 11 o'clock, Adolf Hitler stands before 150,000 cheering Austrians in Vienna's Heroes Square.
Fellow Germans of Austria, as I speak, you must understand and share my emotions. This is the moment of the greatest accomplishment of my life, my divine commission. The country of my birth has become a part of the German Reich. A great historical change that has come to our German people. Austria, the most thoroughly German outpost of the German people, shall henceforth be the newest bulwark of the German nation and therefore of the German Reich. The German Reich, as it stands today, shall never be broken by anyone again. You will all fulfill your oath sworn today from Königsberg to Köln, from Hamburg to Vienna. Austria, now and forever Germany. Germans, today, no force on earth can shake us.
Hour after hour, through the day and night, over the Vienna radio.
By decree of the Führer and Chancellor, a plebiscite is ordered for April 10th for the Austrian people to express approval of the new union.
By decree of the Führer and Chancellor, an Austrian secret police is created under command of Heinrich Himmler, chief of German Gestapo.
By decree of the Führer and Chancellor, the professions of law and medicine, sports associations are closed to Jews. Jews are prohibited from wearing the swastika.
By decree of the Führer and Chancellor, former Austrian Chancellor Kurt Schusnick, former President Wilhelm Miklas, and 38 other former Austrian officials are held for trial for high treason.
Thursday next morning, pacing his study is Major Emil Pei, one-time commander of the Austrian Heimwehr, bitterest Austrian foe of Nazism. While in the next room are his wife and 19-year-old son, Herbert.
Mother.
Yes, Deacon.
When you came past the door, what did he say?
Nothing. Nothing. Walking up and down, back and forth. 3 hours now it's been. I know what he's thinking.
I think I do, too. Oh, he's stopping now. Listen.
In here, Emil. I'm in Herbert's room.
Mother.
You'll know now.
I have decided.
Yes, Emil?
Goodbye, Malvinen. Goodbye, Herbert.
All three of us?
Are you Austrian or German, Malvina?
Austrian.
Herbert. Austrian or German?
Austrian.
Good. God protect Austria.
On the fourth day of Germany's invasion of Austria, Major Emil Pei, one-time Vice Chancellor of Austria, head of the Austrian Heimwehr, his wife and 19-year-old son, by murder and suicide. Also dead on the fourth day of Austrian annexation, Friedrich Reitlinger, Tyrolean industrialist, and his daughter Jane, by suicide. Dr. Gustav Beyer, professor of medicine, and his daughter Helga, by suicide. Professor Gabor Noble, head of the Vienna General Clinic, by suicide. 30 suicides a day in the country that at week's beginning was Austria's proudest and oldest sovereign state of Central Europe. Austria. At week's end, the subject province of Adolf Hitler's Third German Reich. Years ago, in a German prison, Adolf Hitler, in chapter 2 of his book Mein Kampf, first wrote of his dream of the union of Germany and Austria. In chapter 14,
all Germans in Europe must be united in one great nation. The Germans of Czechoslovakia are our blood brothers, and to their country we must turn for new expansion of the fatherland.
Capital of the World War-Born Republic of Czechoslovakia. 11 million Bohemians, Slovaks, and 3.5 million Germans. A state half surrounded by the new Austro-German Reich. To the floor of the Czechoslovakian House of Deputies rises a leader of the German Nazi minority party, Deputy Karl Hermann Frank.
Mr. Speaker, the Reichsführer's triumph in Austria proves that you cannot deny to us, the Germans of Czechoslovakia, the right to live and honor our people. Our ally is Adolf Hitler. Our demand is self-rule. Germans in Czechoslovakia, I tell you this before it is too late.
Order.
Order. Order. The Führer and the might of the German Reich are very near. France and Soviet Russia, far away. We Germans of Czechoslovakia look forward to the day when...
The chair must interrupt the Nazi deputy, Frank. I have just received a message from our president, Eduard Benes. To the Parliament of Czechoslovakia, I am pleased to transmit to you two notes received today from the government of France and the government of Soviet Union. France renews her promise to fight to defend us if we are attacked. Soviet Russia pledges its aid in these words. If Czechoslovakia is invaded by Adolf Hitler, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics stands ready to defend Czechoslovakia, even if the Soviet army has to drive a path across Poland.
Rome. While Czechoslovakia, sworn object of Hitler's ambition, trembles, Hitler's sworn friend Italy, long protector of Austria, goes through unhappy hours. Then, March 16th.
Members of the Italian Chamber of Deputies.
Il Duce!
A great political event has occurred. Austria has become a part of Germany. The Führer has reached his aim. What has happened was slated fatally to happen. There were persons who hoped the event would place Italy and Germany against each other, a prelude to a world war. It was a childish hope. Now the world knows that the Rome-Berlin axis has shown itself in this momentous hour valid above all.
same day in London, in the House of Commons, Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain rises to face the members.
Mr. Speaker.
The Right Honorable Prime Minister.
Gentlemen, the events in Central Europe have administered a profound shock to European peace. The hard fact is that nothing could have arrested this action by Germany unless we and others with us had been prepared to use force to prevent it.
Has His Majesty's government given, or does it intend to give, any guarantee to Czechoslovakia against German aggression?
British obligations toward the Czechs are those that every member of the League of Nations assumes toward its fellow members.
That is no guarantee at all. It's utterly worthless.
Shame! Shame! Mr. Speaker, His Majesty's government is a craven government. They know that Italy agreed to betray Austria in return for German armed aid in Spain. Britain and France should take joint military action at once to checkmate the Spanish rebel threat to the Empire.
Gentlemen, I believe that we shall best serve British interests, best serve peace, and best serve the cause of freedom if we keep out of Spain and do not attempt to burn our fingers, whatever other nations may do.
Same day, while the Commons is meeting in the Spanish embassy in London, Ambassador Pablo de Ascaretti calls his capital by long distance.
Here is your call to Barcelona, Spain, sir. Go ahead.
Hello? Hello? Premier Negri?
Yes?
This is Ascaretti in London. I call you up to verify the rumors that the papers are printing here. They say that our northern army has collapsed and that the government is seeking a truce with Franco. Is that correct?
No, those stories are exaggerations, but things are very bad, Ascaretti.
Yes?
Our army is in retreat, but we think we will be able to check the rebel drive. However, word has just come through that 30,000 German troops have marched over the Brenner Pass into Italy and will arrive in Spain within the next few days.
30,000 more German troops? But what will that mean?
It means our government may collapse within a week unless we get help.
As the Spanish ambassador in London reveals to the world that 30,000 crack German soldiers are on their way to Spain, Premier Negrin flies from Barcelona to Paris, goes into immediate conference with the new French Prime Minister, Léon Blum.
We must have more munitions, Premier Blum. We have the men, if we could only arm them. The non-intervention pact is forcing us into surrender for lack of munitions, while the rebels receive everything Germany and Italy want to send them.
I know the situation, Premier Negrin. Of course, this is not a question that I can decide personally. It is a question of policy to be determined by the whole cabinet. It would mean scrapping the non-intervention pact.
Premier Blum, unless the French cabinet acts at once, France may soon have another fascist state on her southern border.
I will call an emergency session of the cabinet tonight. You'll know our decision before morning.
Midnight, Wednesday, March 16th.
To the Army of France. Order of mobilization. 2nd and 3rd Army Corps will proceed immediately to the Spanish frontier. 5th, 8th, and 20th Battalions Field Artillery will leave on die for the Pyrenees. Anti-aircraft batteries will take up positions on all hydraulic power stations from on die to the Mediterranean.
In France, at dawn this morning, 70,000 troops mass on the Spanish border. In Spain, at 10 o'clock this morning, Italian bombers from Mallorca rake Barcelona with its 14th consecutive air raid in as many hours to bring the day's air raid casualties of Spanish loyalist civilians to 1,200 dead, uncounted thousands wounded, in the most devastating bombardment in history. In Washington, D.C., at 12 noon today, Secretary of State Cordell Hull warns Europe against a return to barbarism, declares that the U.S. must prepare against aggression with an additional billion-dollar naval expansion program. In Moscow at 2 p.m. today, Foreign Commissar Maxim Litvinov of the Soviet Union calls for a conference of the world's democracies to halt German, Italian, and Japanese aggression by combined armed force if necessary. Tonight at 8 p.m. in Paris, anti-fascist demonstrators fight stab police. Tonight at 8 p.m., Poland presents an ultimatum to Lithuania over a Baltic frontier incident. In Great Britain at 8 p.m. tonight, the hands-off policy of Great Britain hangs in the balance as four members of Prime Minister Chamberlain's cabinet threaten to resign, a gesture which may result in the recall of Anthony Eden and Earl Baldwin of Bewdley to head a temporary government. The eventual decision by popular vote of the question of armed intervention in Spain and Czechoslovakia. But at week's end, no nation intervenes in Central Europe. The peaceful invasion is complete. And Austria, outpost of the Roman Empire against the German barbarians, mighty empire herself for eight centuries, becomes a subject state of Adolf Hitler's Third Reich. With new impact, the world sees this week one man reforming an empire. Italy now his subordinate ally, his troops in Spain, his ambitions insatiable and unpredictable. One man who this week says,
I did not make the decision to take Austria. It came to me. On Friday night, I was not even thinking of Austria. Then suddenly, I knew that the deed and the hour was predetermined in history. I did not consult anyone. I decided and gave the orders.
And what orders will Hitler give tomorrow? What orders will he give to the 30,000 Nazi troops just reported to have marched to Franco's aid in Spain, perhaps to snatch a rebel victory for himself in Italy? What orders will he give to his Nazi agents in pro-Nazi Hungary or in anti-Nazi Czechoslovakia? What colonial demands will he make upon England and France? What decisions will come to Hitler in the day or in the night tomorrow, and what orders he will give? No man can tell. But one thing is certain, that the crisis of this week's news is not the end, but the beginning of one of the most tempestuous news-packed eras any age has ever known. It will be an era of fast-moving events, greater in the vast sweep of their influence than any events in history before them. And it will be an era that will be seen as no era has ever been seen before. For week after eventful week, life's pages of news pictures will make the 18 million men, women, and children who read Life each week eyewitnesses of the news of the world and the ways of the world's people. In Life, they will see history in the making, as though it were happening right outside their own windows. And having seen, their knowledge of the world will be enriched and their understanding deepened. The new issue of Life, jam-packed with news, with art, with sport, with all things you're interested in, will be on sale tomorrow, Friday morning. Get your copy early. Life, the news magazine of pictures.
Next Thursday at the same time, the March of Time. This is the National Broadcasting Company.